Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Hello, folks. It's Jim Hansen sitting in for Frank Gaffney, and we are going to do some Secure Freedom Radio. And incidentally, if you enjoy the kind of milk of human kindness, sweetness, and light commentary that I provide here, you can find more of that with full snark at Twitter, where I am Uncle_Jimbo. You know, folks, one of the main reasons I feared and opposed a Hillary Clinton regime was the damage she and any appointees she put on the Supreme Court could do to our freedoms, the most important of which is enshrined in the First Amendment, our freedom of speech. Now, that right has been under assault from the left, and Hillary would have been a nightmare unleashing thought and speech police on us. The election of Donald Trump seems to have so unhinged the left that they are now making full-throated assaults on him and anyone offered up as a member of his new administration. In a twist on the censorship and hate speech policing they would have brought to bear had their champion of state power been elected, the left is now shrieking racist, bigot, hater, Islamophobe, anti-Semite, and every other vile slur and calumny they can come up with, like monkeys at the zoo flinging poo. It brings to mind that line from The Princess Bride. You keep using that word, but I do not think it means what you think it means. Now, since they don't operate the organs of state power, the left's ability to implement the more Orwellian bits of their political correctness agenda is somewhat limited. So for the time being, we will be spared an actual Ministry of Truth and Thought Police. But the left seems to have collectively, a mode of operation they're quite fond of, self-deputized themselves to operate as arbiters of what may or may not be said or even thought. Now, this is not surprising, as Hillary herself was involved in an attempt to put global thought and speech policing in play with UN Resolution 1618. This was an effort by Islamist groups which dominate the UN to actually criminalize anything which they found offensive. Now, we all know those folks are in a state of permanently chafed, and this resolution calls on all member nations to criminalize whatever bothers these grievance mongers. Now, in a rare moment of acknowledging that we actually have a Constitution and Bill of Rights that makes criminalizing offense giving impossible, well, for now, Hillary suggested that we would need to use some old-fashioned techniques of peer pressure and shaming. That was her plan, to break the rabble from their antiquated notion they could actually think and say what they want. Instead, we should flip that on its head and allow the folks who don't like something to decide what the rest of us can profess. Now, while it's certainly legal to use peer pressure and shaming to change actions, the very idea of putting discussion of the very real and very dangerous problem of Islamist supremacy and the jihad off limits is so entirely un-American and anti-constitutional that it should be shamed and peer pressured right into the nearest dumpster. And protecting the Islamists from hearing anything they don't like is hardly the limit. Criticism of any protected victim group is on the chopping block, as well as opposition to any of the enlightened left's plans to turn actual justice under our system of laws into social justice that benefits their client constituencies in ways that are sometimes too absurd to even understand. For instance, right now, the same people who savagely attacked Christian bakeries that didn't want to bake cakes for gay weddings now support the right of Starbucks to refuse to call out the name Trump if that's what one of its customers tells them that's the name they want used for their order of overpriced Java juice. Even worse, our oldest ally, the Brits, have lost their ability to dissent and actually have rules against offending others, which can bring the state crashing down upon them. Incidentally, if our friends across the pond want a blueprint for throwing off the yoke of an oppressive state, we've got a pretty good one. But one of the most absurd acts in recent history saw a British politician arrested in public for quoting Winston Churchill. Take a moment for that to set in. One of the most British of all Brits, and a leader who had as much to do with saving the entire UK and the free world from destruction in World War II, is now off limits. The left is determined to make any criticism of the entire canon of liberal politics de facto proof that you are an ist. Racist, sexist, whatever. You are evil and must be shunned. Having the audacity to say, hey, maybe we ought to have an actual border where, you know, it's illegal for people to cross it, is an outrage. How dare you? It is awful, cruel, bigotry, and racism. And don't you dare call the people who do this illegal aliens, even though that is the proper legal term. No, they are simply undocumented immigrants. Or, in one of the most perfectly implemented uses of Ministry of Truth-approved newspeak, they are new Americans, as if anyone who can get past our nearly non-existent borders should receive a welcome packet and a guide to signing up for benefits. Oh wait, they actually do! Equally or even more heinous is any failure to accept the complete moral authority of the black community to assert that not only do black lives matter, but your life, if like me you are a fluorescent pinkish tone, is an unfair gift which you did not earn and should actually apologize for in what is dementedly called white privilege. You know, I missed the white privilege line when I joined the army at age 18, right next to black dudes, Hispanics, and we were all told the only color that matters here is green. The same folks who profess to be the tolerant ones will tolerate no deviation from their politically correct playbook. And team diversity has requirements for race, skin tone, sexuality, gender preference, and dozens of other approved identity victim groups. But they've got a zero tolerance policy for diversity of opinion. This is taught as secular gospel on campuses all over the country, where special snowflakes are protected from anything that might cause them bad feels by a cadre of committed social justicists. Just try to find a conservative, and you will search fruitlessly, although a sign you have found one is a mob of aggrieved souls surrounding them, whining that an idea they don't like has invaded their safe space. Universities used to be places where we sent young adults to learn how to think critically. Now they learn to criticize actual thinking and simply absorb the truth from the newly minted commissars of correctness, or pay the price and be a cultural leper, outcast and unclean. The right to dissent in thought, speech, and action is vital to a fully functioning democracy. It is the bedrock upon which all of the rest of our freedoms are built, and it is what makes America great, and greater than anywhere else, because there is nowhere else with the right to express your beliefs absent fear of retribution from the government. But equally so, we must have a society where that right is recognized and respected. Shutting down opposing viewpoints is a sign of a totalitarian state. And that, my friends, is not what the U.S. is about. So it's time to stand tall and tell the unlicensed and un-American thought and speech police, not in this country, We will not submit, we will not shut up, and we will prevail. I'm Jim Hansen, and I approve this message, and I hope you do as well. We're doing Secure Freedom Radio, and up after the break, we'll be talking with Daniel Horowitz.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Jared Ogden, former Navy SEAL and member of Team Military on National Geographic Channel's Ultimate Survival Alaska. I want to tell you about an issue that you probably haven't heard much about. Thousands of America's veterans are suffering from occupational and environmental exposures that they were exposed to while serving in the military. We call these the toxic wounds of war. From Agent Orange and Gulf War illness to post-9/11 burn pit exposure and heavy metals in the air, and other toxic exposures that we don't fully understand. The Sergeant Sullivan Center is a powerful voice in our nation's capital, standing watch over these forgotten wounded. These men and women can't do it alone, and they need your help today. Every dollar raised by Sergeant Sullivan Center goes to medical research, public awareness, and advocacy. You can make a tax-deductible donation today at www.sergeantsullivancenter.org. That's SGTSullivanCenter.org.
This is Frank Gaffney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. We're going to talk right now with Daniel Horowitz, senior editor at Conservative Review, and also author of The Conservative Consciousness with Daniel Horowitz. And let's hope that conservative consciousness is getting a revival in the current climate. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be with you. And I'm telling you, I thought it was busy before the election. It's even crazier now.
And I like this kind of crazy. I got to be honest. I'm a fan of chaos, because if you can act faster than the other guys, you can really make some interesting things happen. So talking about making things happen, one of the problems a lot of us had with President Obama was his actions, where he used his pen and his phone to create chaos, to bypass Congress, to bypass the other organs of government, and in most cases, to bypass the will of the American people. Now, not really suggesting that, you know, Trump should be as much of an executive overreacher as that, but he can use those same authorities to undo some of the dangers of the things President Obama did. And you've got a great article about that where you pick some of these. So tell us, if I gave you the power of the Trumpian pen, what would you do first with it?
You made some really important points there. This is all about momentum. Like you said, chaos. You want to shock and awe. You want to get in there right away when you have the political capital, particularly on the immigration refugee issue, for which Trump was so unabashed on the campaign trail. So you know where he stands. The people know where he stands, and they voted for him largely to protect them. According to exit polling, people are very concerned about terrorism issue. That's why it's so important to do as many things you can do through executive action, so it doesn't get bogged down through the legislative process. Now, you're absolutely right, and I make note in this piece, we don't want to repeat the mistakes of past Republican administrations where we became intellectually dishonest and support things that are not constitutional, overstep the boundaries of the executive power just because we like the outcome. But the good news here is that much of what Obama has done that is so harmful was through executive action, and nowhere is that more evident than with immigration policy. So you know what? Garbage in, garbage out. All those executive orders could be reversed on day one. And one of the things that I raised awareness here is that the refugee issue is a very big problem now. Obama wanted to haunt us from the grave, and he was able to set the number of refugees into motion for fiscal year 2017, which will last until October of next year, beyond his tenure, bringing 110,000 refugees. As I note in my piece, there's a record number coming in. The good news is you do not need Congress to shut that off. I think you need Congress for some long-term reforms. Trump could shut it off the day he takes office.
So the whole flow of unvetted refugees, as the FBI director and others have noted, who we can't actually vet, it's not possible, there's no records in Syria to vet them against, we could stop that now and then go ahead, like you said, and fix the broken process in the next legislative session.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is something that, you know, we've been very stymied and frustrated that you have a president that doesn't care about our security needs, the cultural concerns with refugees from Somalia and Syria and Iraq, Afghanistan, and yet there's nothing Congress could do. This is the one area where they gave away authority in the 1980 Refugee Act. It was sold to the people as giving congressional input, but it in essence gave the president unilateral authority to set the number of refugees. Obama set it at 110,000. Again, Trump could come in there and set it at zero. There is no requirement that he take in any refugees. Again, we need to lock, you know, certain reforms in case we do get a Democrat president next time. But for now, that is one thing he has a mandate to do. It is easy to do. Public opinion is on his side. He could come back from that inaugural ball and just sign that order, shut it all off.
So, okay, we're talking with Daniel Horowitz, who has some great ideas that we assume are in some way, shape, or form shared by some members of the Trump administration. So let's get that shredding machine out on the East Lawn. What's the next executive action you're going to feed in there to make the world a better place?
So obviously it's the DACA, the executive amnesty. That has got to end. Right, so that takes two. There's two components to that. There's the affirmative benefits, Social Security cards that he's handing out to illegal immigrants, literally without an act of Congress. I mean, Obama created his own immigration program that Congress has plenary authority. It's an enumerated power over immigration naturalization. You cannot do that unilaterally. So certainly Trump could just terminate it. That's very simple. The other part of that is he's got to restore the Secure Communities program that Obama gutted. That was the program where ICE officials would work with state and local authorities, law enforcement, prison, jails and prisons, so that they could run the names through a federal database to ensure that they are not holding any illegal aliens and, you know, they could be transferred over to ICE. We're not doing that now, and deportations of criminal aliens have gone down dramatically. So that is something he could easily do to clamp down on the security problems with criminal aliens.
And that ties right into what I hope is another piece, whether it's an executive action or whatever it takes to do it. But sanctuary cities is one of the most absurd things I've ever heard of, to have local officials at any level saying, yeah, we know that's federal law, but we don't think it's important. And, you know, we want to feel good about ourselves. So we're going to allow illegals to live in our cities and stop the federal government from doing its job to keep the rest of us safe. So they got to go too, right?
You know, it's funny. We live in a time where the federal government is crushing the states, taking away from the states every last power that they have under the 10th Amendment. Yet the one thing that everyone agrees is manifestly within the purview of Congress, it's national sovereignty. You know, this is beyond settled law that they have full power of immigration. States just get away with this. So that is something, again, even without Congress, the statutes are already on the books. They could you know, with the great news that Jeff Sessions is going to be Attorney General, he is the quarterback on this. As Attorney General, he could cut off a lot of the federal law enforcement grant funds to states that don't cooperate. This is something he could do absolutely immediately.
What's another issue where we could make some immediate headway undoing some of Obama's horribly bad ideas?
You know, one thing that's very important that a lot of people don't realize, and again, we don't want to be intellectually dishonest here and say, hey, do things through executive action that we like, but you got to follow the statute. And as it relates to immigration statutes, they were written in a way as to give the president broad authority to ratchet down immigration as needed, not to ratchet it up. I mean, whether they like it or not, whether the left likes it or not, that is the statute. I want to read to your listeners, this is very important, Section 212F. Of the Immigration Nationality Act says that whenever the president finds that the entry of any aliens or of any class of aliens into the U.S. would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, he may by proclamation and for such period as he shall deem necessary suspend the entry of all aliens or any class of aliens, and he can impose any restrictions as he wants. So that's the thing. Obviously, you know, some very long-term deep immigration reforms you want to do with Congress's consultation, certainly, you know, create new statutes. But as it relates to the flow of immigrants from Syria, from Somalia, during a time of war, something we have never done during a time of war, that he needs to do immediately. You do not need to wait for Congress, because Congress has already delegated that authority to the president.
And we should note that the last six presidents have all used some form of that authority to keep the nation safe. So this would not be a brand new, you know, first use of this power. It's a common thing for presidents to say in the war against terrorism, in the Cold War, in any number of these situations. The president has taken that authority, and to do so now and to declare that we cannot vet refugees from jihadist-controlled areas and not let them in until we can, or maybe never if we can't, just seems like common sense. Daniel Horowitz, you made a whole bunch of common sense during that. Thank you so much. We're doing Secure Freedom Radio, and up after the break, we'll be talking with Luis Fleischman.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Donald Trump has begun fleshing out his cabinet and has made a series of tough choices that will not only help determine his success, but the future of the country. So far, so good. One candidate for Secretary of State stands out as singularly capable of helping President Trump make America great again. Former UN Ambassador John Bolton. He's an experienced and principled public servant and diplomat, a brilliant advocate for freedom, with a proven record of putting America first as it leads the world. John Bolton also knows how to compel the State Department bureaucracy to carry out presidential direction. Absent that, its denizens will sabotage Mr. Trump at every turn. Consequently, they and their allies will make a Bolton confirmation process difficult, but it is far better to fight them now than under some less capable secretary throughout a Trump presidency. This is Frank Gaffney.
Life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts. Now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Secure Freedom announces the launch of our newest initiative, the Counter Jihad Campaign at counterjihad.com. We have gathered some of the foremost experts and activists to begin our fight back against those who long ago declared war on us. You can see our first two ads asking those who see something bad happening, like the attack in Garland, Texas, or the dozen jihadists at the Boston Marathon Killers Mosque, to say something. Join us and be a part of the Counter Jihad.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. That's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. Now that the June 30th deadline for a nuclear agreement with Iran has passed, Secretary of State John Kerry is in Vienna struggling to finalize an agreement. Listeners to this program know that the nuclear talks are deeply flawed and a bad deal is preordained. We now know one reason for this bad deal is because the Rockefeller Foundation spent millions to back a loose coalition of peace groups, think tanks, and former U.S. officials to push for a nuclear agreement with Iran. This included freelance diplomacy with Iranian officials over the past 10 years. In addition, a core member of this effort is former CIA official Paul Pillar, who wrote a 2012 article titled, "We Can Live with a Nuclear Iran." This explains why a bad deal with Iran will emerge from the nuclear talks. This is another reason why Congress must kill this deal. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at our new website on the Iran talks, irantruth.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. We have the pleasure right now of being joined by Luis Fleischman, who is advisor for the Mengus Hemispheric Security Project that the Center for Security Policy runs, as well as author of Latin America in the Post-Chavez Era, The Threat to U.S. Security. Now, Luis is in Argentina doing what he does, keeping his finger on the pulse of things in our hemisphere. And you also wrote a brilliant piece about a new opportunity to reevaluate U.S. policy in Latin America. And Luis, I wanted to just open it up to you and say, if you had the ear of the new president and you wanted to advise him how we could make better friends and take more advantage of our friends in the region and also take care of some of the enemies, what are some of the things you would tell a new president to do?
I would say assemble a team in Latin America. Give the region priority, because this is the neighborhood where we live, where the United States lives. In our neighborhood, namely in the Western Hemisphere, you have a multiplicity of challenges. You have basically countries that are losing their ability to govern. In other words, the state is going down the hill as a result of corruption and as a result of the expansion of the drug cartels. The drug cartels are not only corrupting Mexico, they are corrupting also many countries in Latin America. And there are countries such as Venezuela that are narco states. In other words, where the political and military elite of Venezuela is directly involved in drug trafficking. So far in the last almost two decades, we have been extremely tolerant to that kind of behavior. And the way we have dealt with it is by basically putting the judiciary, trying to prosecute them. instead of developing a strong political pressure or a strong public diplomacy pressure, sanctions to stop the activities of Venezuela with regard to drug trafficking. I would also place a lot of emphasis on issues of security. Several countries in the area are strengthening relations with Iran. Iran has a presence in about 12 countries. There has been a terrorist attempt at an attack that was halted in 2007 that was done by a member of Hezbollah. It was supposed to be a major terrorist attack at the JFK airport. So cells of Hezbollah cooperating with drug cartels are all over. Hezbollah is helping drug cartels put together tunnels through which they smuggle. They can smuggle drugs or they can smuggle weapons. They can smuggle even terrorists. According to the a report by the Southern Command, about 10% of the people that are being smuggled through the southern border are Sunnis with ties with potential ties to terrorist groups. Now, all these things, in my opinion, have been neglected, and we need a policy where the White House actually has control over the rest of the agencies. That, I think, in terms of security. I think in Latin America now there is also an opportunity, since the left-wing regimes are collapsing little by little, and Brazil and Argentina, both big giants in South America that have had for almost two decades an anti-American policy, now they have changed regimes to regimes that are friendlier to the United States. I think it would be good for the United States to develop a relation, to strengthen relations, and try to make this country into permanent allies of the United States in the same way that Europe is. Particularly now, when we have a war on terror that is going on, and to a certain extent, we have a clash of civilizations.
Absolutely. Now, Luis, you mentioned that
America presents an opportunity for good allies.
Luis, you mentioned that some of these left-wing states are collapsing and having problems. And you mentioned, you know, good possibilities with Brazil and Argentina. What about Venezuela? They were one of the worst. You know, under Chavez, they turned into a left-wing nut state, narco state, everything. It was all bad. There's a lot of change going on there. Is there possibility to, you know, make things better in our relations with them?
Not at present. Not at present, because Venezuela, as long as Mr. Maduro is in power in Venezuela, there is no way, no conciliation, no pop mediation that can help it. Venezuela is a rogue state, is a revolutionary state, and they will continue to do the things that they are doing, they've been doing for the last almost two decades. So I believe that at this point, the best way for the United States to make friends is to stand behind democracy and behind the oppressed. That's something that Donald Trump actually also pointed out. Cuba is supporting the repressive state in Venezuela. We need to demand from Cuba to stop supporting the regime in Venezuela, and I think we need to create an international coalition so that the recall referendum is accepted by Maduro. In my opinion, the United States needs to stand behind democracy in Venezuela, not as a way of nation building, but as a way of helping the security of the country. And part of the condition to secure, the regional security and American security is basically to push Maduro out of power.
Okay, let's then assume that we need to put that kind of pressure and hope for that kind of change in Venezuela. But you mentioned that Cuba is one of the enablers of the Maduro regime, and they're a problem. President Obama went down and did something that we have steadfastly avoided for a long time. He has normalized relations with Cuba. So now that we have these relations, What could a new president do to use that as pressure to get the Cuban regime to, A, do what you had just mentioned regarding Venezuela, but also there are any number of other things they do that are awful, you know, from a human rights perspective and from a security perspective. What should we do to push Cuba in the right direction?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to place conditions. You're absolutely right, Jim, that the normalization of relations with Cuba has been the main thrust, the key of U.S. foreign policy in Latin America. But the problem is that, you know, what President Obama had in mind was to normalize relations with Cuba as a way to say that is my legacy. I changed, you know, more than 50 years of intransigent, quote-unquote, policy toward Cuba. But on the other hand, we have not effectively demanded anything from the Cubans. The Cubans continue to oppress their people, continue to imprison their people, and continue to support all the rogue elements in Latin America, including Venezuela, including Bolivia, including Nicaragua. And all these countries are countries not only that are becoming increasingly authoritarian, but they also have connections to elements that are dangerous to our security, including Iran, and including particularly Iran, but who knows, maybe other other elements as well. So I think I would not suggest that President Trump, President-elect Trump, would undo what Obama did. But I would suggest that use the American leverage to put pressure on Cuba on Cuba to change all these policies, and that includes human rights and the support for Venezuela.
Well, I hear an awful lot of common sense in what you're saying, Luis. It seems like things we should have been doing, but now we have an opportunity to change course and hopefully start treating our friends better and our enemies worse in the region. Luis Fleischman, advisor.
Absolutely, and I think Mr. Trump is absolutely capable of doing it.
Well, let's hope he does. Luis Fleischman, advisor for the Mengus Hemispheric Security Project, as well as author of Latin America in the Post-Chavez Era, The Threat to U.S. Security. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
We'll be right back with Sean Davis from The Federalist.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
It's been over 7 years since a church group from another state brought a couple hundred refugees to the rural county where I live. I wanted to know, how could they do this? What was the governmental process that allowed the resettlement of refugees to a county ill-prepared to assimilate them? Employment opportunities were scarce. The health department was not familiar with illnesses and mental health problems of people who came from parts of the third world. The school system was not prepared to teach large numbers of students who didn't speak English.
That's author Ann Corcoran discussing her new book, Federal Immigration Policy, Resettlement and the Hijra to America. She explains how Muslim immigrants are being quietly resettled into American towns without vetting them, even for terrorist links. Corcoran also explains how the global jihad movement is using immigration as a stealth campaign to spread its influence in America. You can read Federal Immigration Policy, Resettlement, and the Hijra to America on securefreedom.org or purchase a copy on amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
I'm Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. One of President Obama's worst foreign policy failings is the lack of a strategy to defeat Al-Qaeda and ISIS. These terrorist groups are part of a global movement to establish Islamic supremacy and Sharia through violence. This movement is called the Global Jihad Movement. It will not be defeated without a strategy that recognizes its true nature. In January 2015, we issued a comprehensive strategy to defeat the Global Jihad Movement. It is called the Secure Freedom Strategy and is based on National Security Directive 75, the strategy that President Ronald Reagan used to defeat the global totalitarian threat of his time, the Soviet Union. Like President Reagan's strategy, we lay out a comprehensive plan on how the United States government can be reorganized and focused to understand and defeat the global jihad movement. You can read the Secure Freedom Strategy at securefreedom.org, or you can purchase a copy on Amazon.com. I'm Fred Fleitz.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anysoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Jim Hansen, and we are joined now by Sean Davis, who is co-founder of a great publication, The Federalist, and one of my favorite people to follow on Twitter, as he points out the hypocrisy and ridiculousness of the American left. And Sean, that has been on full display as they've thrown a nationwide tantrum since Donald Trump had the audacity to, number one, win an election, and number two, not immediately recant all of the reasons he won that election and apologize to them, because they just can't believe that this has happened. So they're throwing a tantrum is the correct term, and rioting, breaking stuff, tearing it up, and basically saying he's not their president. Are they right?
Well, no, of course they're not right. Obama was my president, even though I didn't vote for him and didn't want him to win. And Donald Trump is America's president starting on January 20th. You know, it's interesting, after that third debate, when the media kind of pounced on Trump for refusing to say he'd concede the election, which he didn't actually say. He said, you know what, we've not even had the election yet. Let's see what happens. So they treated that question, his response to it, as though he was taking, an axe to the fabric of democracy, a sledgehammer to the foundation of our republic. And yet here we are a week after the election, and leftists are protesting and rioting.
And literally taking sledgehammers to people's cars.
Yes, in Chicago, a man was dragged from his car and beaten because the rioters thought he might have been a Trump voter. And so here we are in this environment after Democrats told us that, Trump was basically a traitor for not accepting the results of an election that hadn't even happened yet. And yet, where are Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama? Why have they not denounced this violence against our democratically elected next president? Why have they not called for peace and calm? You know, they were real quick to come out and tell Donald Trump, the president-elect, to denounce this person and that person and that person, yet they cannot deign to denounce any of this violence that, quite honestly, is being perpetrated by people who supported either Hillary or Obama. It's shameful.
Or both. And I guess it's part of the hypocrisy. You could call it liberal privilege, but I hate to give them, you know, the idea that this concept of privilege exists. But if it does, it certainly exists in what is considered the right of the left to call the right out for one thing and then do the exact same thing with no repercussion from, as you mentioned, their political leaders or the media or any of the rest. So it falls on folks like you and me to go ahead and do that. Now, is there any chance, there's also calls to have electors delegitimize this election and somehow throw it to Hillary. That seems, again, to be more liberal fantasy, because in the end, I don't know that they could actually make that happen, can they?
Well, again, it's funny. Let's go back to the rhetoric before the election actually happened. People on the left, progressives and Democrats, were just fit to be tied over Donald Trump saying anything was rigged. You're not allowed to say anything is rigged. That just really cast doubt on our democracy, and it's inappropriate and shameful. And yet here we are after the election. They're trying to say the election was rigged, the Electoral College is rigged. And now, like you said, now they apparently want to rig the Electoral College themselves after we've actually counted the votes. Like, it's too much for me. I'm not sure I can parody them.
So now the Electoral College and the very concept that Hillary may have won, and I guess did at this point, win the popular vote, delegitimizes Trump, even though the Constitution sets up the Electoral College, and apparently we're going to be teaching civics for quite a while now. And when you go to run for president, you don't run to win. You don't run a campaign to win the most popular votes. You win a campaign to win the most electoral votes. And consequently, because Trump did that quite a bit more successfully than Hillary, he's somehow demonized because he didn't win more votes. We're not a pure democracy. We're a constitutional republic. But they don't like that either.
No, and it's just so silly to me. You know, I watch college football a lot. I'm kind of obsessed with it. And this whole argument that he's not really legitimately the president because he didn't win a contest that nobody was actually waging is a lot like saying maybe Alabama didn't win that game. Maybe they're not really undefeated. Because if field goals counted more than touchdowns, then they would have lost some of those games where they got way more touchdowns than the other team got field goals. Or maybe we should count total yards and not total points scored. It's just silly. The fact of the matter is that Hillary and Trump both ran under the same ground rules for the same goal. They both wanted to win the Electoral College. They were both going towards the exact same outcome. Trump won. Hillary lost. You don't get to just go backwards in time and say, hey, let's assume the rules were different in a way that would allow Hillary to win, and then further assume that Donald Trump wouldn't have known about those rules and would have run the same campaign he ran. And so, of course, Hillary would win. Let's call her president-elect and move on. It's just silly, and it's kind of denial of the highest order.
Yeah, you know, and as it turns out, it really looks like the Hillary campaign was running a landslide campaign where they thought they could really run the table, because she didn't campaign. She never went to the state of Wisconsin, my home state. I'm from Green Bay. And she never set foot in that state during the campaign because they assumed it was safe. They forgot about the fact that there are a lot of people in Wisconsin who hadn't been coming out to vote because the Republicans hadn't been running anybody who didn't make them slightly ill. So they ran someone that people in Wisconsin could get behind. They got behind him. And because Hillary was trying to run the table and get herself a landslide victory, she may have stepped in it.
She totally did. There was an article in the Washington Post, I think, that said Hillary spent more money on ads in Omaha, Nebraska, going for the lone electoral vote there, than she did in Michigan or Pennsylvania or Wisconsin, which is just shocking to me.
That's
hubris. Why on earth would anyone do that? Yeah, it's absolute hubris. It's spiking the football before you've ever even caught the pass. She deserves what happened to her.
So, Sean, what happens now? I mean, obviously, the wackadoo fever swamp left is going to continue to throw their tantrum and do what they're doing and try to secede from the country, which I don't know where. I guess California. They could have the Cal-exit as opposed to the Brexit or the Texit. But what about the rest of them? What are the Democrats going to do now as far as becoming some sort of legitimate opposition?
Well, they can do one of two things, in my view. They can do what they did after 2004 when Kerry lost and just go, you know, pedal to the metal left. There was a lot of talk after Kerry lost in 2004 that they needed to moderate and they needed to become more of a centrist party, and they rejected that. And they picked Howard Dean to run the DNC. And you know what? It worked out well for them. They won in 2008. They won in 2012. And so they can either do that, they can moderate, they can be centrist, or they can do what they did with Howard Dean and just pick a crazy, kooky leftist who is completely disconnected from middle America. And it looks like they're going to do that in Keith Ellison, a Muslim congressman from Minnesota.
But they've got to feel the burns. You know, they've got those people who formed 40%+ of the Democratic electorate, you know, of their legitimate voting bloc, who believe that, yeah, socialism, sure. I mean, this capitalism thing hasn't worked out so well. We should try it. You know, they believe that the Constitution is a dusty old document in the back of a building that they no longer consider relevant. So they almost have to go that way. And I just don't see how that's going to resonate with anything more than that, you know, group within their party.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Now, I don't buy into the whole permanent political majority thing. You know, people said after 2004, oh, the Republicans are going to control government forever. And then after 2008, oh, Democrats are going to control government forever. So I don't look at 2016 and see, you know, red winds as far as the eye can see. It can definitely change. But I have a difficult time seeing how electing kind of a radical guy from a district that Obama carried twice by 50 points when they just got thumped in the Rust Belt is really going to help Democrats. But maybe they've decided they need to buck up the base. They need to scrounge for every last, you know, college leftist, progressive, totalitarian voter, and they'll just leave a middle America to the Republicans. I mean, if that's their gambit, go for it.
Sean Davis, co-founder of The Federalist, thank you so much. This is Jim Hansen, and that's going to wrap up Secure Freedom Radio for today. Frank Gaffney will be back on Monday to bring you more information for the war for the free world.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.